I mean, what's that football focus doing? Last week they had Brady. This week they got Brady.
We're doing it. We're literally doing it differently from everybody else.
As a matter of fact, moving forward from this point on, I will not make reference to PML.
Ready to get into it?
Yeah.
All right. We're going team by team. I would be very careful about slinging stuff. Am I going to get sued?
Are we going legal on this?
I like football. I like football season and all the things that go with it.
Welcome in to the PFF NFL podcast. Steve Palazzolo, Sam Monson. We're here live on YouTube breaking down the best and worst case scenarios for every AFC team. Sam, you ready to go?
Yep, let's go.
Back in your Florida setup again here?
So, improved setup slightly this week. We have a new camera, which is the camera that Trevor Sikkema uses for his fancy-ass setup. So you can see the background here is a little bit more blurred. There's a little bit more depth of field in there. You know, it's a little bit nicer visually, at least right up until the point you factor in the strobe lighting effect that some viewers may find disturbing, I believe is the way that's usually phrased. That's the fan. And if that's not on, I will die before the end of this show. So unfortunately, if you're watching, you're going to have to live with this sort of light flickering effect because the alternative is that I won't make it to the end of the show.
Can we put a warning graphic up there or something? Because that could be rough after
Like Sam's visual feature strobe lighting effect that some viewers may find distressing.
Yes. Not as distressing as the fake black mark that's on your headshot in the studio over here that people keep trying to wipe off their screen. We apologize for that one.
That is kind of annoying.
We also apologize in advance for Sam and the psychedelic view that we have there. But we're going to go team by team with the AFC, all 16 teams. We'll give you a best and worst case scenario, talk a little bit about win totals, and then we'll have an NFC show on Wednesday. It will hit those 16 teams. But first, as a parent, your top priority is always your children's well-being. You want to give them everything they need to grow and thrive, both now and in the future. And with term life insurance from Fabric by Gerber Life, help protect your family so their future is secure no matter what happens. Fabric was designed by parents for parents to help you get a surprisingly affordable term life insurance policy quickly, often in less than 10 minutes. Life insurance can get a bad rap for being complicated, but Fabric makes it easy to apply with its seamless digital experience. It's all online and on your time. And if you need the extra support, you can access a team of licensed agents who can answer your questions along the way. So take steps to protect your family today with Fabric by Gerber Life. Take the 60-second quiz to find out if term life insurance is right for you and apply today in just 10 minutes at meetfabric.com/PFFNFL. That's meetfabric.com/PFFNFL. M-E-E-T fabric.com/PFFNFL. Policy is issued by Western Southern Life Insurance Company and distributed by Gerber Life Agency, LLC, using Fabric technologies not available in certain states. Prices subject to underwriting and health questions. For more information, visit us at meetfabric.com/PFFNFL. All right, Sam, we've got, by the way, I wanted to put this to the viewers really quick. We were just discussing off air, and we talked about this a little bit around draft season. Do the people want us to go back in time and break down a round one of an old draft? There was during draft season, I was live tweeting the 2005 NFL draft when Aaron Rodgers fell, or 2001 when Michael Vick goes number one, or 2008, or whatever it is. Is there an old draft that would be worth us going pick by pick, giving our thoughts at the time, reviewing it a little bit, getting some sound bites, and just having some fun with that? So if people want us to do that, let us know. And which draft? Like, what's the best draft for us to go back? Is it a recent one where we had takes and we could tell you how right or wrong we were? Is it an old school one? Do you have a feeling off the top of your head here, Sam? Any drafts that stand out?
No, but I mean, given how old we are, we can go back quite a way and still have had takes, you know, not necessarily backed with PFF data or whatever, but certainly opinions at the time. And then you'd have to go back, like, how far would you have to go back before you would have had no real clue heading into the draft?
Probably 96 or 97. I think that's when that was like the pinnacle of the start of my NFL fandom, I would say.
Yeah. So, you know, it gives you quite a way to work with.
Yeah. So we're not redrafting them or anything. We're just going and saying, hey, look, you know, RJ Soward got picked by the Jaguars in 2000. How did that turn out? Let's review it. You know, that type of thing. Anybody have an idea who RJ Soward is? Well, yeah, no. I mean, he was supposed to be the deep threat to Keenan McCardell and Jimmy Smith, and it didn't work out. Dude lasted a season. But that's what we'll do. We'll review that. So let us know which drafts you might want to hear. All right, let's go team by team in the AFC, reverse alphabetical order-ish. Sound good? I just want those Bills fans to have a little anticipation again here on today's
show. We really need to have some kind of like randomizer created, you know, so that you can just press a button and it just spits out a random AFC team for you to do.
I kind of like that. Name a team. Here we go. And let's start. All right. So we're going to start with the Tennessee Titans, and we'll give you a win total per DraftKings Sportsbook and kind of let you know where the market stands with that team and give you we want to give like a realistic best and worst case scenario, right?
Yeah. So that's key, realistic, right? Because there, you know, obviously any team in the NFL generally could finish winless. Everybody gets hurt, your season is a disaster, you don't win any games. Or, you know, any team could theoretically win the Super Bowl, right? This is the offseason, nothing's happened, it's all there. But realistic. And this is obviously subject to our opinions. And this is what tends to generate the most hate mail. This is where we get a lot of our bets from. So if you haven't listened before, or if you're not familiar with that idea, like if we've said something in the show, you think we're absolutely full of it, there's no way that's realistic, that's just ridiculous, then send us an email, nflpodcast@pff.com, put bet somewhere in the subject line and, you know, bet what you think is going to happen. If we think it's a good bet for us, obviously, then we'll take it. And if you win at the end of the season, you get a free year of PFF Plus. We did that last season. We had a whole bunch of these. And it was pretty fun. Like some of the things we thought had no chance whatsoever of coming true did. So, you know, people were right. We were wrong. Geno Smith was one that had a bunch of them. Russell Wilson, like that whole world had a bunch of those connected to it. So, you know, in our minds, these are realistic best cases and worst cases. But we might be wrong and you might think we're crazy. So, call us out on it.
Yeah, so let's start with the Tennessee Titans and talk through this, because part of it's going to be like, okay, what, based off what they've built this offseason, what are the things that need to go right? You know, what are they relying on? And then worst case will be like, all right, where are the weaknesses on this team that, you know, if they remain weaknesses, it's going to be trouble. So Tennessee Titans, for things to go well, I think we keep using the term they're attacking this offseason with Rand Carthon, new general manager, as a competitive rebuild. So you've got some bigger names out, Bud Dupree out, and Robert Woods out, and you know, players that they've invested in over the last couple of years, and they didn't necessarily directly replace them. Taylor Lewan at left tackle. So you've got a whole bunch of youth and younger players replacing some stars and some stars-ish, bigger names, higher priced players, and then, you know, it's still Ryan Tannehill under center and Derrick Henry. So what's the best case scenario this year for the Titans?
Over under
7.5.
Yeah. The best case scenario is they overachieve again, right? And they have one of those seasons where it doesn't look like it really makes sense, but with Mike Vrabel pulling the strings and with the talented players that they do have, you know, hitting their high end of results. And in a division which is better, but still not great, they can contend and they can make the playoffs and they can win double digit games. And, you know, who knows where that lands them in the seeding in a brutal AFC, but like they're a playoff team, I think, at the high end of their range of outcomes, if one that you don't expect to contend, you know, at the very sharp end. Like they're a playoff team that gets bounced either in the divisional round or the wildcard round by one of these legitimate AFC, you know, superpowers.
Yeah, and then I think specifically as far as the roster goes, one of the worst receiving cores in the NFL and one of the worst offensive lines on paper. But that you can offset that by maybe Treylon Burks at receiver taking a big step forward in year two. I thought he was good as a rookie last year. Remember, he was the sixth first-round wide receiver in 2022. He had a pretty good year. If he takes a step forward to become more of a true number one, if Derrick Henry stays healthy and becomes that guy that they rely upon, even though the offensive line doesn't look great on paper, they can still run block pretty well. They're more of a pass-blocking liability. If they get back to that identity where it's Derrick Henry and he has those few couple 200-yard games and all that, and Tannehill stays healthy. Like, if a healthy Ryan Tannehill is still good, they will win some games in Tennessee, I think, despite offensive line on paper, receiving group on paper not looking good. And then defensively, you know, you could paint a picture in that secondary where Christian Fulton, Roger McCreary come together, Caleb Farley maybe in year three with all of his injuries. I think it's going to be a health type of thing with Tennessee, and then Mike Vrabel pulling it all together. So I think best case scenario is what you're saying. Playoff caliber team where a lot of these ifs, right? I mean, that's going to be the story of the show. A lot of these question marks become positives for the Titans.
Yeah. And, you know, the offensive line was worse in the NFL last season. It's almost certainly better this year simply because it couldn't get worse. But also, they made a lot of changes. Now, those changes won't necessarily all work, but it's one thing when you're changing just a bunch of your offensive line. Generally speaking, change, you know, throws everything into chaos, right? So if you had a really good offensive line, you change 4/5 of it. That's a concern because the chances are whatever the mean outcome of those changes is, it's probably going to be worse than the four guys that were good last season. Whereas when you're changing, you know, 4/5 or however much of an offensive line that was the worst in the NFL, chances are you're upgrading simply by changing, like, because the line was so bad, it was the worst unit in the league last season. So doesn't mean that the average of that group is going to be tremendous, but it's probably going to be better than it was a year ago. So I think Tennessee's problem spots have room to grow this season. And actually, you sort of think, well, the flip side of that is the chances, there is a chance that this whole thing completely unravels and everything goes to hell. Because Vrabel is there, I think they're one of these teams, you know, like the Steelers, where their floor is probably quite high. Like, yeah. Last season felt like a disaster for Tennessee. Worst offensive line in the league, a pretty bad receiving core, you know, Tannehill bad, getting hurt, all these kinds of things. They still won, what, 7 games? Like, you know, the floor, I think, is actually reasonably high for Tennessee, even if the whole thing doesn't work.
So let's talk a little bit about that worst case. Remember, the over-under is 7.5. Worst case scenario for the Titans is all these question marks, the offensive line, the receiving group. We just kind of see that year in, year out. And week in, week out. And with Tannehill, just to, you know, recap his career quickly, pretty an above average starting quarterback for the Miami Dolphins from 2012 through 2018. And then in 2019, he takes over about week 5 or 6 for the Titans. He has a 90 grade in 2019. They go to the AFC Championship. He has a 90 grade in 2020, an 83.7 grade in 2021. Literally his three best seasons all occurred as a member of the Tennessee Titans. And we said, is it because it's a play-action heavy attack? Is it because of Derrick Henry? Is it because of A.J. Brown? It's a combination of all those things. Tannehill, last year, 74 grade, kind of reverted back into what he was with the Dolphins. That could be even worse this year because of the rest of the supporting cast. So if Tannehill is a low 70s quarterback with this supporting cast, even with Mike Vrabel as the head coach, it's going to be really tough for the Titans to even compete for a playoff spot in their worst-case scenario here.
Yeah, I think their true worst-case scenario does involve some sort of complete disaster at the quarterback position. So it's like Tannehill, either the wheels completely fall off, he gets hurt for the year, for whatever reason, they're forced to go to number two or number three, which is obviously Will Levis, who they just drafted, and then Malik Willis, who they trusted sufficiently a small amount last season that they basically abandoned the idea of even playing him after one game and threw Josh Dobbs in there off the street, you know, just because they thought he could execute a better passing game than Malik Willis could at that point in his development. So I think if Tannehill is somehow completely done or, you know, not able to play this year and they're forced to turn to one of those guys, that could change the dynamic completely. But outside of that, like if they get a full season of Tannehill, even if it's a diminished version, I can't really see this team losing more than or winning less than like 6 games.
All right, let's move on to the Pittsburgh Steelers. Best and worst case, we're going each team in the AFC. Reverse alphabetical order. Best case scenario for the Steelers this year, Sam?
Kind of similar, I think. Best case scenario is their young players all kind of pull it together, independent of the problems that we think are there, I think are there, in terms of coaching and scheme. So Kenny Pickett, year two. George Pickens, year two. You know, young players across the board, a bounce back from Allen Robinson, given the disaster he had with the Rams. Offensive line is coming together anyway. And just that whole thing coalesces into a much better offense than it's been in the last couple of years. And the defense continues to chip away and make incremental improvements. And that puts them back on level footing with the top teams, firstly in their division and then somewhere towards the sharp end in the AFC. But I suspect that the even the high end of range of possible outcomes for Pittsburgh is, you know, short of those very best teams in the conference, which I know includes a team in their division in Cincinnati, arguably Baltimore, Kansas City, you know, Buffalo as well. So I suspect the same as Tennessee, that the most optimistic outcome for them is double-digit wins, playoff team, you know, looks like a contender in any given week, but is probably not at the level of the elite teams in the league.
Do we lean a little bit into the optimism show here, though, and say there is a world where Kenny Pickett takes a year to jump? I'm not saying he can be Joe Burrow year two, but I cited this on one of our recent shows. Does Kenny Pickett take that year two jump that we've seen from other quarterbacks? Other quarterbacks in year two have become either MVPs or MVP candidates, guys like Patrick Mahomes or Lamar Jackson. But is that in him? Like, if Kenny Pickett he graded at 75.5 last year as a rookie, if he's an 85 graded quarterback this year with that supporting cast, are we actually talking about the Steelers? Because their defense will probably be good. You know, they've added some pieces there. And if, you know, again, this all depends on health, you know, full season of TJ Watt and Cam Hayward. And do the Steelers have what it takes to just be on the cusp of the Bills and the Bengals and the Chiefs and the AFC? I mean, we could paint that picture. I think it's less likely, but I like a lot of what the Steelers have done this offseason. I keep saying that. I'll say it again when we do our season previews. But a lot of it's going to depend on Kenny Pickett. And then what ends up being the worst case scenario is, you know, Matt Canada being back there offensively, who has not shown the ability as an offensive coordinator to maximize anything for what they have. He's been limited with old Ben Roethlisberger with rookie Kenny Pickett last year. But can they create space? Can they create open throws? Can they create easy offense in Pittsburgh? We haven't seen that yet. So I think that falls in that worst case scenario bucket where Pickett doesn't develop and the offense remains stale. And even if they have a good defense, you're still talking about an 8-win team or a, you know, 8-8-1 team so that Mike Tomlin never has a losing season.
Yeah, I mean, you're right. You can paint a picture in the most optimistic light possible that puts Pittsburgh in the same category as Kansas City, Buffalo, Cincinnati, you know, and truly one of the best teams in the NFL. But I feel like that's pushing our, you know, realistic best and worst case scenario thing. Like, if you imagine that bell curve of possible distributions, that's in there. Like, it's in the range of outcomes, but it's that tiny, tiny tail of that curve, of that graph. I think a more realistic, like, best case scenario is they're good, double digit wins, they're a playoff team, maybe they win a playoff game or two, but then they run up against one of those really elite teams. Or maybe they even beat one of them, you know, one time because they have that in them. But eventually they don't make it all the way in the playoffs. You're right, though. I think the worst case scenario is stagnation. It's that the thing that was concerning Matt Canada and that offense, and the fact that it seems to have sort of put shackles around multiple quarterbacks at this point, Roethlisberger at the tail end of his career, and we kind of dismissed that as just the reality of the broken down version of Roethlisberger that you were dealing with at that point. But then it's doing the same kind of thing to Kenny Pickett with a different style quarterback. Like, Pickett does not want to get rid of the ball in an instant the way Roethlisberger did at the end of his career. So it's doing it to multiple guys now. If that doesn't change, then Kenny Pickett doesn't take a step forward. Then George Pickens doesn't take a step forward. Then Allen Robinson is going to be wasted because you can't utilize him the way you need to within that offense. The whole thing doesn't get any better. And the real worst case scenario is that causes Mike Tomlin to have a losing season and he wins 7 games, you know, instead of 9 this season. And Matt Canada, or the stagnation of the offense, becomes responsible for losing one of the most fascinating records in NFL history.
Over under at DraftKings is 8.5 for the Steelers. So yeah, worst case is you're under 8 and maybe, you know, like Mac Jones in year 2 with New England.
Yeah.
Right. So you're coming out of year 2 saying, what do we have in Kenny Pickett? Or did we waste a year of Kenny Pickett because we didn't make a coordinator change and we have this really much better supporting cast? The worst case scenario would be that for Pittsburgh.
And that's actually, yeah, you're right. That's way more important. Like, I was facetiously talking about the Tomlin thing, yeah, and that's just fun. But like, the actual worst case scenario for Pittsburgh is they have a crappy year, relatively speaking. It sort of wastes a year, but critically, it like throws doubt on what Kenny Pickett is going forward. Because I think right now, everybody in Pittsburgh loves Kenny Pickett. They're happy with his first year, pleasantly surprised. You know, everything is optimistic, a lot like Mac Jones, you know, year one for New England. Everybody was good. Everything was positive. Now it's like, great, kick on. Let's see what you can really do. And then year two for Mac Jones happened. And now it's like, is he even the guy? Like, how long do you give him before you go to someone else? That's the real nightmare scenario for Pittsburgh, is that you're left less sure of Kenny Pickett after this year than you were at the end of his rookie season.
All right, before we move on to the New York Jets, the player you benched in fantasy football just went off. But with Best Ball and DraftKings, you get the best of your team all season long. This year, Best Ball and DraftKings is bigger and better than ever with $10 million in guaranteed cash prizes up for grabs. Join DraftKings' biggest Best Ball contest today and get your first entry back in DraftKings dollars as soon as the draft is finished. Enter DraftKings' Best Ball Millionaire Contest and snake draft your team for the season. Each week, you'll automatically rack up points from all your top scorers. No ads, drops, or trades. Teams with the most points by the end of the season will have a shot to take home the $1 million top prize. So head to the DraftKings app and sign up with code PFF. Join the DraftKings $10 million best ball tournament and get your first entry back in DraftKings dollars. That's code PFF only on DraftKings. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. One per customer. Opt-in required with $10 entry fee. Bonus issued is $10 DK. Age and eligibility restrictions apply. Void where prohibited. See DraftKings.com/promotions for details. Ends July 14th, 2023. All right, man, we're on to the Jets. Over-under for Aaron Rodgers. New York Jets is 9.5 wins. This feels like an easy one. Best case scenario, Aaron Rodgers is the dude. He's back to his MVP ability. He's got his guys there. Garrett Wilson becomes the next Devontae Adams. Last year's defense remains. You're talking about Sauce Gardner at corner. They've got all their pass rushers back. The Jets are a Super Bowl contender. Can we actually paint the picture of a best-case scenario AFC championship or even into the Super Bowl for the Jets?
No, I think the best-case scenario for the Jets includes a championship. Yeah. Like, the best-case scenario for the Jets is Aaron Rodgers replicates Joe Namath, you know, guaranteeing victory, riding off into the sunset, whether or not he retires at the end of it, but, like, achieves that, you know, realization of, hey, you guys didn't think this could work. It worked. We won a championship. We win. You know, screw you guys. Like, that is, I think, a realistic best case scenario for the Jets, is that the whole thing works. Rodgers is great. All the things you talked about, it all comes together. And okay, sure, it's still a nightmare run in the AFC. You've got to get past all those great teams we just talked about. But the ability, the capacity for the Jets to do that, to run the table and go and win that championship, I think is a realistic best case scenario for this team.
Is this going to be the widest range of outcomes? Because when we talk worst case scenario for the Jets, I don't anticipate a Russell Wilson to the Broncos type of worst case. Of course, anything, right, like you said at the top of the show, anything is possible. But I think the worst case for the Jets is the how things come together and it ends up becoming a 7 or 8 win season. You know, so the best case, I think, is pretty clear. Rodgers, you know, he's getting older, but it doesn't matter yet. Receiving core comes together, defense comes together. They have all these pieces where, again, you could paint the picture of the Jets are right there winning the AFC East over the Bills and Patriots and Dolphins and playing for a championship and maybe winning it. The worst case, though, again, I think it's easy to paint a picture where, yeah, hey, maybe Aaron Rodgers has too much power now, and maybe he needed a Matt LaFleur to kind of steer him in the right direction, or maybe Aaron Rodgers – you know, he's got too much Alan Lazard and Randall Cobb and former Packers. And then you look at the offensive line, which on paper, if everybody's, you know, up to their ability, it's not bad, but it's not one of the best in the league. Maybe the offensive line falls apart. The defense regresses because it is so difficult to play that well year over year. So there's this other scenario. It's a wide range of outcomes, I think, here for the Jets. Plus, they're just in this loaded AFC. Even if they're that good, are they still just a 7 or 8 win team at the end of the day?
I mean, that might be their biggest concern in terms of a low floor for this. But I feel a little bit like Tennessee and Pittsburgh with the Jets, that I think their floor is fairly high because, you know, they won 7 games last season with a complete disaster of a quarterback situation. No matter how the Rodgers thing works, it's going to be better than that. They should have been a playoff team last season, even with the quarterbacks that they had. So with Rodgers coming in, even if it doesn't go well, if he manufactures no chemistry with Garrett Wilson, if the offensive line remains, you know, a beat up mess and they don't get any better, it's still like a 7-win team. you know, even in that really tough conference, like Green Bay won 8 last season. The Jets won 7 with what should be a worse roster and without Aaron Rodgers. I feel like you put them together and the worst case scenario is that team wins 7 games and is irrelevant again. And the worst case scenario really is that it didn't work, right?
It didn't work.
The Rodgers thing, the all or nothing, let's load up, let's focus everything, let's trade like a significant capital to get Aaron Rodgers because we put all the eggs in one basket. Like, that's the worst case. You put all your eggs in one basket, you drop the basket, and all the eggs are smashed, right? It's you're no worse off than you were before. You put all your eggs in one basket, but you didn't get the benefit of the eggs.
Well said. I mean, I'm admittedly guilty sometimes of just looking at history and being like, oh, it could be like this historical thing or that historical thing, right? So it's not like, hey, it's going to look – the worst case has to look just like Russell Wilson's season where everything was terrible, or just like Brett Favre going to the Jets in 2008. But honestly, if the Brett Favre thing happened, here's what happened with Brett Favre. It looked great early on, right? They were 7-3 or 6-4. I don't know. They were on their way to the playoffs, and then they didn't make the playoffs. Favre did not have – he looked like he was having a good season. This is working, and then leveled off, and he didn't have a great year. If that exact scenario happened, not just because it happened 15 years ago and, you know, the parallels, but that wouldn't surprise me if that happened, in part because the AFC's loaded. And again, did Rodgers regress last year, or was that just a lack of weapons and being thrown in with the rookies? Like, all of those things are potentially on the table for the Jets.
And that's, I just quickly Google that because, you know, in my mind, it's like Brett Favre for the Jets, total unmitigated disaster. He ends up, you know, doesn't play long, goes somewhere else, and that's where he becomes good. But he went 9-7 with the Jets. Like, it wasn't, you know, it was bad. It didn't work, but it wasn't the catastrophe that you sort of remember it as because it didn't achieve what it was supposed to. So I think that's a realistic worst case for Rodgers and the Jets, is that it doesn't work again. We repeat history. He goes 7, 8, 9 wins, misses the playoffs, and then, you know, bounces, retires, goes somewhere else, whatever. It didn't work is the worst case.
All right, we're on to the New England Patriots. Over-under for the Patriots, if I'm reading this right, over at DraftKings, is 7.5. That's it for New England. I'll say this.
The mighty have fallen.
On the optimistic side for New England, is their peak what we saw 2 years ago? Mac Jones is a rookie. They win, 10 games, go into the playoffs. They're clearly inferior to the Buffalo Bills, get crushed by the Bills in the playoffs. Is that really their ceiling this year? New England, they're a playoff caliber team. They go into the playoffs. They can't get by a Buffalo, a Cincinnati, a Kansas City. Maybe the Jets. That might be the ceiling for New England. Or is there more? Or is it year 3 of Mac Jones? He's got Bill O'Brien back. And maybe they sign DeAndre Hopkins, right? If you plop DeAndre Hopkins onto this roster, now you have a much better supporting cast. We know the impact of a wide receiver 1, and that pushes everybody down the depth chart. The whole receiving core looks so much better. Takes a lot of pressure off them. Mac Jones is in year 3. I think Mac Jones has been a good NFL quarterback, given the circumstances, right? Last year, do you just throw that out completely? The guy could complete passes, generally takes care of the ball. Can Mac Jones be that uber game manager type? Patriots had a really good defense last year. Can you paint a picture where the Patriots are, you know, competing for the AFC championship, potentially just because, you know, they add DeAndre Hopkins to the roster?
Yeah, I mean, it's possible. First of all, tremendous piece of onomatopoeia with the word plop. I mean, just fantastic work. I think it's a bit of both, right? The top end of the range of outcomes for New England is probably still similar to what it was in 2021 in terms of you're not going to get past a Buffalo, a Kansas City, you know, the teams we keep talking about in the AFC, right? I don't really see a world where New England is not even better than them, the equal of those teams. But I think they can be better than they were in 2021 and still be in that scenario, right? Like, they could, the optimum or the high end range of outcome for them is that you do see a big jump from Mac Jones, and Bill O'Brien coming in does sort of put him back on the right track and not just get him.
Did you unplug? Did we lose Sam? A lot of pressure on me. I think what Sam was trying to say, I've lost Sam. I'm assuming everyone else has. I think what Sam was trying to say is the Patriots could be better than they were in 2021. But still won't matter. Because you can't, unless Mac Jones takes that, you know, the thing we described with Kenny Pickett, unless Mac Jones jumps into that Joe Burrow, Josh Allen, Patrick Mahomes, Justin Herbert, Trevor Lawrence conversation, then it doesn't even matter. You back? I don't hear you. Is this just me? Just looking at my messages. Oh, yeah. It's definitely just Sam. All right. My dream has come true. Steve is going solo for the podcast here. This is it. I'll take it home here, Sam. Did you think about plugging it in? Maybe it's the plug. Maybe it's battery. All right. Worst case scenario for the New England Patriots. I'll do it. I'll do it. You let me know when you're back. Worst case scenario for the Patriots. Whether or not they get DeAndre Hopkins. Maybe they don't get him. Did they do enough from a playmaker standpoint? Is Bill O'Brien even enough?
Am I back?
Yeah, you're back. Don't.
All right, there we go.
You're killing me, man. That was my time to shine.
I just tried to angle the microphone slightly in the other direction, and everything died.
You never touch the microphone, dude.
No,
never touch the microphone in the home setup. Like this, I could look, move the mic.
Mm-hmm.
Hardwired over here. You never touch the mic in the home setup.
I mean, I'm also hardwired, but apparently it's a much more sensitive setup.
It is. All right. Worst case scenario for New England. Mac Jones is terrible. Last year was not Matt Patricia's fault. Carry on.
Yeah. Just to finish my thought before I move the microphone, I think there's a world where they do take a big step forward in Mac Jones's development. We feel a lot better about the New England, but it's still not enough, right? They're still behind all the elite teams in the AFC. But they're better than they were even in 2021 in Mac Jones' rookie season. So I think that's definitely the kind of zone that they could be in. Worst case scenario is, you know, it didn't work. Like Bill O'Brien doesn't fix Mac Jones, and now you got to reboot. You got to start over. And you're another year removed from Bill Belichick being good without Tom Brady. You know what I mean? Like does the realistic worst case scenario for New England include the firing of Bill Belichick?
Oh, gosh. I don't know, man. I don't know if we're there yet.
How far away are we? Like, this
I think
is the
2 years.
Right?
I think we're 2 years away. I think if this year's bad, like if this year's a 7 or 8 win team, a team, then I think we're talking hot seat type of stuff. Or at least like there's talk, there's rumblings. Okay, then Belichick's got one more shot in 2024. But I think realistically, what we're looking at here is the worst case is less about Belichick, and I think more about Mac Jones. It's more about, after year three, is he really the guy? Do we need to go the veteran route? Should we trade for Aaron Rodgers for, you know, a 2 year last hurrah for Rodgers? Should we try to draft someone else? I mean, that I think is the worst case scenario for New England, is they're not even in QB purgatory. They're in like, let's move on to the next guy territory.
But don't you think those two things are connected? Like if you're Robert Kraft, right? Yeah. And Mac Jones was bad this year and you've made the decision, okay, collectively, we're moving on from Mac Jones. We're going another direction. Do you give Bill Belichick another like first round rookie? Do you give him the next guy? Because that's like 2-3 more years tied to that guy.
No, because what's probably going to happen is you'll have the stories like Belichick the GM has failed Belichick the coach. And so then you hear Robert Kraft is thinking about stripping some personnel power away from Bill Belichick. Bill can still coach. Defense was top 6 in the league, but they haven't figured it out on offense, and that's Bill for picking the wrong quarterback. So you might get those types of rumblings in a worst case scenario, and then maybe Bill ends up just leaving on his own because he's upset, and right. You get this whole front office turmoil, Kraft Belichick turmoil, like all of that is in this worst case scenario because it's year three for Mac Jones, and you have his old offensive coordinator, you have Bill O'Brien back. If it doesn't work, we could have serious changes in New England. Maybe not Belichick getting fired, but we'll have some controversy.
Okay. Fired is maybe an aggressive term, but I would put it out there now that the worst case scenario for New England, a realistic worst case scenario, includes the divorce of Bill Belichick and Robert Kraft. Whatever that looks like, whether it's fired, whether it's, hey, we want to strip back some of your personnel power, and Bill says, screw that, I'm out of here. Like, the worst case scenario this season includes the parting of ways of those two guys.
Wow. I think that's fair that it's in there. By the way, the schedule starts with the Philadelphia Eagles, then the Miami Dolphins on Sunday Night Football. We know the Dolphins are supposed to be good. The Jets with Aaron Rodgers, and then at Dallas. So not an easy start for the Patriots. We might have these rumblings early in the year. And we know that New England's not always the fastest starting team in the NFL. Even with Brady, they tend to slow play it sometimes in September. So that will be interesting. Over-under, like I said, for the Patriots is 7.5 over at DraftKings. On to the Miami Dolphins. Over-under for their season is 9.5. So a lot more optimism in Miami. They were a playoff team last year. What's their best-case scenario this year?
Similar to the Jets, I think. I mean, I think you have to assume that the realistic high end of Miami's outcomes is they get a fully healthy Tua all season long. The offense remains one of the most explosive, devastating, productive in the NFL. The defense continue. And in fact, the defense takes a step forward because you got Vic Fangio added to the mix and the talent that was already there and the young players taking a step forward. And we are talking about a genuine Super Bowl contender. And I guess if you're saying that the high end of outcomes for the Jets is coming home with the championship, the high end of outcomes for the Dolphins probably has to include that as well. I mean, we saw last season, they can win those types of games and beat, you know, elite teams. So I would say their high end has to include one.
Yeah, I think more consistency from Tua. He ended last year with an 81.9 grade. Remember, there was a point midway through the season, he was still over 90. He did taper off down the stretch. And in some big games, at the Chargers, at the Bills, against the Packers, I think it was Christmas Day. That was when one of his, I think it was his last concussion. So health for Tua, consistency for Tua, and then all of that speed that we saw that was just game-changing with Waddle and Tyreek Hill just taking that next step as an offense where they are so difficult to defend. Offensive line health falls into this best-case scenario. Teron Armstead getting through the season and someone else developing either at right tackle or left guard. And then the defense, as we've mentioned, I think the Dolphins' defense is going to be one of the most fascinating stories of the year. Adding in Jalen Ramsey, you kept mentioning, hey, Vic Fangio, adding him to the mix. There's a lot of potential on this defense, a sneaky good defensive front with Christian Wilkins and Jalen Phillips. So there's a lot of reason for optimism with Miami to the point where you could paint, an AFC championship type of picture, even with the Bengals, Chiefs, and Bills in the AFC right now. Worst case scenario for the Dolphins has to involve more Tua injuries, offensive line, injury. I mean, a lot of it's going to be injury-based, right, just because of the history of the players that they're relying on.
So is it worse for Miami if, you know, injuries resurface for Tua, whether that's conventional injuries, you know, ankle, knee, whatever, or concussions become a problem again, or that what we started to see towards the end of last season, which looked like teams had kind of caught up to this offense and figured out had adjusted to what was happening or sort of forcing them to go in a slightly different direction. Is it actually worse for them if Tua stays healthy? He's still fine, but actually the league has just neutralized this offense to a degree. And now Mike McDaniel has to go back into the lab and figure out the next iteration and to get back ahead of the curve again. To me, it's almost worse if Tua is actually fine, but the system has been not neutralized, because it's always going to be like, you know, have some success, but like, it's no longer, you know, putting up the top EPA per play, you know, rivaling Kansas City as the best offense in the NFL. It has been blunted to the point where it's just good.
Yeah, and then, yeah, I mean, that would be pretty bad too, because you've got, this is the fourth year of Tua at quarterback. Then you have all sorts of questions. Is Tua the guy going forward? Is Mike McDaniels the guy going forward? Yeah, I mean, I think that could be worse than a Tua injury, as far as,
because the injury thing is actually relatively straightforward, right? It's like, Tua's hurt again, but we know the offense is great. Now we just need another quarterback, which, you know, in today's NFL, we know is like relatively achievable in a way that it didn't used to be. You just go, fine, we're moving on from Tua. But if the offense actually stalls, and even if Tua's good, you know, we've seen him play at a 90 PFF grade level within the system that's cooking, but now the system is no longer cooking. So now Tua's broken, the offense is broken, you're not getting the most out of Tyreek Hill and the rest of those weapons, and none of it is going where it needs to go. That, to me, I think is a much bigger worst-case scenario than Tua was just hurt again.
Yeah, because it's much like the Patriots thing, right? Where they, if Bill O'Brien was supposed to fix things and he doesn't, you know, just like if this offense plus Tua, this was supposed to be this next level offense, bringing the Shanahan scheme to Miami. If it doesn't work, especially with all those playmakers, yeah, maybe that is more concerning. I could buy that. So that's your worst case scenario for the Dolphins, and that's, you know, a 6-7 win team probably. Just like we weren't specific with some of the other teams, but I think Miami's got an opportunity to compete in the AFC. There's a world where that happens, and then there's this worst case world where it just a lot more question marks at the end of the season.
Yeah, I mean, for some of these teams, like the actual win loss total is kind of irrelevant. It's more like what is the outcome of the season. So for New England, like the worst outcome would be Mac Jones is done. Bill Belichick might be on his way out. You know, for the Jets, it's that your gamble didn't work. You're back to square one. For Miami, it's that all the things that we're optimistic about right now were actually sort of false dawns, and we're almost back to square one again with this whole Mike McDaniel era. Like that would be the worst case for them.
All right, before we get on to the Raiders, I'll give you another best case scenario here, Sam. Smooth sack summer. When you're playing in the summer sun, make sure you've scaped your pubes to bum. That's right. It's a summer to keep your balls cool while still looking hot with Manscaped. You haven't heard this one yet, Sam. It's great.
No.
The leaders in below-the-waist grooming are making sure we all have a ball this summer by giving our pants partners everything they need to stay fresh. Dive headfirst into smooth sack summer by going to manscaped.com for 20% off plus free shipping with our code PFF. The Manscaped Performance Package 4.0 has everything you need to prepare for that summer bod. They have the built-in ultimate grooming bundle for your summer grooming. Their Lawnmower 4.0 trimmer features a cutting-edge ceramic blade to reduce grooming accidents thanks to their advanced skin-safe technology. The Lawnmower 4.0 has a 7,000 RPM motor, a new multifunction on-off switch that can engage a travel lock, and gives you the ability to turn the 4,000K LED spotlight on and off when needed for a more precise shave. Did I mention this trimmer's waterproof, too? Beach, lake, or shower, this razor will devour even the strongest pubes. Manscaped even threw in two free gifts to their Performance Package 4.0. It's the Manscaped Boxers and the Shed Travel Bag. So you can get 20% off plus free shipping with the code PFF over at manscaped.com. That's 20% off plus free shipping with the code PFF, manscaped.com. It's smooth sack summer, boys. Get on board or get left behind. Shout out to our friends over at Manscaped. Unbelievable.
Absolutely.
The summer campaign is just spectacular.
I got to say, grooming accidents is a fantastic euphemism, you know, for what that's actually describing. I am using the Shed, the travel bag that's upstairs in the bathroom here. So
I've got to
get that. Also, I'm informed there is a box of goodies waiting for me in the office somewhere.
It's right over here.
Which I am hoping contains the beard trimmer, which I am in fairly desperate need of at the moment. So I'm excited about that. And if there's one thing our listeners can do for us, you know, to help support the podcast right now, it's using Manscaped promo codes, because we have to hear Steve continuing to read out, you know, Smooth Sack Summer.
Just do it. Just do it so they stick with us. Manscaped.com, 20% off. Your beard trimmer is over here in the there's a box right over here by your seat. So next week, you'll check it out.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
All right, we're on to the Las Vegas Raiders. Their over-under is 7.5. What's a best-case scenario this year for the Raiders?
Man, that's tough. And the Raiders are always
the
team.
You never give positive feedback to the Raiders. Do you want me to try?
That's what I mean. They're always the team that prompts the bets, right? Because, like, you guys hate the Raiders. Like, I'm struggling to see a particularly good high-end outcome for the Raiders. Like, what is their ceiling?
So the high-end outcome, and this, it's not the optimism show, but it's Jimmy Garoppolo is the quarterback, and he's good, right? Like, Jimmy Garoppolo is a good NFL quarterback who has probably been propped up by Kyle Shanahan. But before Kyle Shanahan got a hold of Jimmy Garoppolo. Garoppolo had two really good games where he was maybe propped up by Josh McDaniels and one of the best, by the way, underrated, one of the best Patriots teams of their entire dynasty in 2016. When Tom Brady came back, they only lost one game, won the Super Bowl. So Garoppolo's been surrounded by good talent. But maybe he's just a winner. Maybe there's a reason why he's won was 65, 70% of his career games. Maybe Garoppolo with Josh McDaniels is going to work. And you know me, like I look when I analyze a team, I start quarterback and playmakers. Garoppolo is a pretty good distributor. You have Devontae Adams, who's still, is he still the best receiver in the NFL? Sure, you can make that case. Devontae Adams, they bring in Jacoby Myers, who's a really good two. You have Hunter Renfro, two-headed monster at tight end, Austin Hooper and Michael Mayer. The best case scenario is all those guys play to what they look like on paper and they're a good competitive team. Now, what does that mean at the end of the year? Maybe 9 or 10 wins is the ultimate best case we're talking for the Raiders. But look, 2 years ago, they shouldn't have been that good, and they made the playoffs, and they were a couple plays away from beating the Bengals. So that's the best case for the Raiders is, I think, sneaking into the playoffs.
Yeah, and I that's kind of where I am as well. Like, you paint this picture of the best outcome of all the various components required for the Raiders to be that. And it's like, what is that? It's like a 9-win team that you're not tremendously enthused by. Like, what are we doing here? But I guess that's where they are realistically. I mean, they were what, 10-7 a couple of years ago when they did beat the Chargers at the tail end of that game, the win and in game. That's probably it. That's their ceiling. Is a repeat of that. You win that one game, nail biter right at the end, and that gets you into the playoffs, and then you get unceremoniously bounced by a good team once you get there.
What's the worst case for the Raiders?
A complete everything and total else. Spiral of everything going wrong, and Josh McDaniels gets drop kicked out of the building again, and now McDaniels' career as a head coach is done. The Raiders have to reboot completely. Coming out of this year with a complete rebuild job on your hands.
Yeah, like for the best case scenario to work too, we only talked about the offense. I'm looking at the defensive depth chart and I'm just looking at last year's PFF grades and WAR all side by side and all that fun stuff. There's two guys graded above 70 on that defense, really. Max Crosby and then Duke Shelley as far as the projected starters. And Duke Shelley, that was just a random breakout year, who knows. I mean, the defense would have to overachieve for the best case scenario to happen. And some of these playmakers or some of these players who really haven't done it at the NFL level would have to. The worst case scenario involves the defense playing like they look on paper, which is just, you know, probably getting torched by all of their AFC West foes, the Chiefs, the Chargers, and the Broncos, and just not being good week in, week out. Garoppolo, same health issues he's always dealt with potentially. And yeah. The Raiders blowing leads like they did last year, all of that stuff on the table. I mean, yeah, it could be a disastrous season for the Raiders. 3, 4, 5 wins, all of that stuff. I think the potential is there for the Raiders in their worst case.
Yeah, not much more to add to that. I think that this is the lowest outcome worst case that we've had so far. Like, of all the teams we talked about before, now they're in the AFC, most of them are pretty good teams, so the baseline should be pretty high, but so far this is the worst case for a team that we've come across as a realistic outcome.
All right, let's move on to the Los Angeles Chargers. Best case scenario for the Chargers? This is the year, man.
Yeah.
That's it.
No, it really is. You know, the offseason champions every year, like the team, oh, this is the Chargers year. They go on a run. They win the Super Bowl. The most positive, realistic outcome is this is the year and everybody doesn't get hurt this year and they actually put it together and Justin Herbert puts himself on that plane with Josh Allen and Joe Burrow and Patrick Mahomes and they go deep into the playoffs and, you know, put themselves in the Super Bowl. Now, I don't even think, I mean, I guess they're in that Miami Jets category where their realistic best case scenario does end with a Lombardi trophy. But I don't even think they need one for it to be sort of like if they go on a run into the playoffs and make it to the championship game, say, I would say that's sort of achieved what they're obviously it's not what they're trying to achieve. Everyone's trying to win a championship. But like if they make it that far, they've had a massively successful season.
Yeah. And we can say that because it really all starts with offense. And yeah, you can have years where the defense is really, really good, but we know that it's going to start with an explosive offense. And so you mentioned the Dolphins because they've shown that they're somewhat capable, especially if their quarterback's healthy. The Jets have Aaron Rodgers, who has been an elite quarterback for the majority of his career. We'll see what he is at 40. And then Justin Herbert, who's right there as one of the top three or four quarterbacks in the NFL, potentially, right? He took a bit of a step back last year, but this is also that best case scenario involves Kellen Moore extracting the best out of Justin Herbert, in addition to the health of Mike Williams and Keenan Allen on the outside, the addition of Quentin Johnston. It does feel like we joke about the offseason for the Chargers, but when you're laying out what are you going to do to the, what are you going to do for this roster, they're making the right moves, right? They invested properly in the offensive line a couple years ago. They're adding speed to a very slow offense. They're making the right moves, I believe, overall for the Chargers. Now it's a matter of them working out. You know, again, part of it working out too is Khalil Mack and Joey Bosa playing to their potential. I mean, the answer for the Chargers is a lot of their guys staying healthy and playing to their potential, and then all of a sudden they are the Super Bowl contender that we think they are every June.
Yeah.
Worst case scenario is they Charger.
Yeah, they Charger, and I think it costs Brandon Staley his job. I mean, I think that's part and parcel of that, is it would be the standard underachievement of the Chargers, but it would also cost the head coach his gig, and that means they're effectively starting over. Now, obviously, it's not a total rebuild the way it would be for the Raiders, because you're not moving on from Justin Herbert or anything like that, but it means you're starting from scratch, right? You're bringing in a new coaching staff, whatever that looks like, and maybe that is the way you need to go to get better in the future, but nobody wants to be in that offseason position of, we don't have a head coach right now.
Yeah, and also in the worst case scenario is the defensive front that they haven't upgraded. I mentioned, hey, they make all the right moves in the offseason. The one question I would have is their front seven. It's not Khalil Mack and Bosa. It's the interior. They bring in Eric Kendricks, but is that going to be enough to not get gashed against the run as often as they did last year, to be able to rush the passer the way they need to? So if the front seven, if they're as bad as they look on paper, compared, you know, last year, it just wasn't good. You know, if Sebastian Joseph Day doesn't play well like he did in last year, and Kenneth Murray doesn't take a step forward at linebacker, all those things come back to bite. J.C. Jackson in the secondary, if he becomes just a complete bust as a free agent, all of that's part of the worst case scenario. And yeah, Brandon Staley probably could be out if that is the case. Over under for the Chargers is 9.5, like it is for the Jets and Dolphins, right? Those are similar teams. This what looks to be a tier two AFC team where you could paint the picture of them taking this next step or just, you know, stagnating. Kansas City Chiefs are up next. They're the top tier. 11.5 is their over under. Clearly they're going to be the favorites to repeat as Super Bowl champions. The best case scenario is pretty easy for the Chiefs. They win another championship. What is a realistic worst case scenario for the Chiefs? Are we at this point where they are the dynasty, much like the New England Patriots? Patriots were in the AFC Championship every year that Tom Brady was quarterback, other than like two or three. Is that where the Chiefs are right now? Or is there a worst case scenario where they lose in the divisional round, or everything that they did with lesser receivers last year, kind of, it's tough to replicate. Like what could go wrong for the Chiefs this year?
Their worst case scenario is the 2008 New England Patriots. You know, it's that injury. Patrick Mahomes goes down the first couple of weeks of the season, and even then you narrowly missed the playoffs because the rest of the team is really good. And like, this is a championship caliber team shorn of a great quarterback. But that's what you're chasing for. Like, even outside of Mahomes going down for an extended period of time, this team should be minimum the divisional round of the playoffs, easily, probably the AFC championship game, if not a Super Bowl. Like, that's the world they're in right now. And I don't really see that anything outside of Mahomes going down can change that.
But I think that's the picture we're trying to paint, right? It's like, just like with the Patriots dynasty, what does a bad season actually look like for that team? It's probably failure to even get to the AFC championship. Of course, the fans are going to be disappointed every year you don't win the Super Bowl. But I think there's a world where the Chiefs, in this worst case scenario, lose in the divisional round, right? They maybe they win the division, but they just, you know, lay an egg in the playoffs. Or more specifically, the two new tackles, Juwan Taylor, who they invested heavily in, Donovan Smith, Both guys graded at 59 last year. I know Juwan Taylor, he has these drastic splits, pass protection's good, run blocking isn't great. But if those tackles aren't good, Juwan Taylor, Donovan Smith, who played injured last year but just didn't look great, if that becomes, you know, a sore spot, if last year's offense where Patrick Mahomes became this incredible distributor, far less dependent on Tyreek Hill or Travis Kelce, if that doesn't work this year, for whatever reason, defenses adjust back. Remember, the whole narrative last year at this time was the Chiefs have to adjust to the league. The league has figured them out. Will the Chiefs counterpunch last year? Will the league counterpunch one more time this year and slow down the offense, even just a touch? Will Travis Kelce lose a step as he gets older? Every year it's going to be, when will Travis Kelce just look old, and what will happen to this offense because he makes so much of it go? So I think all those things are on the table for worst-case scenario for the Chiefs, which leads to just more of like an early playoff loss. I don't think they'll miss the playoffs, any of that stuff, even in a worst-case scenario, but early playoff loss where some of the other elite teams, the Bengals, the Bills, some of these other teams we're talking about, Jets, Dolphins, they take a step forward, and the Chiefs are just, you know, they just don't have their year. That's the worst-case scenario, pretty much.
Pretty rough.
Yeah, sounds tough to be a Chiefs fan. Jacksonville Jaguars, 9.5, another team that's at 9.5. I don't know if these are official win totals or if it's just a fun game where you can change them, but they're at 9.5 over at DraftKings as the default. Jags' best case, is it at the same level as we've said Jets, Dolphins, and Chargers, because they have Trevor Lawrence and they can get over that hump to AFC Championship and beyond?
Maybe it's just because, you know, we haven't seen enough of it yet, or because the defense never really puts it together, or hasn't in the last several years. But it feels like their best case is a tick below that. I struggle to kind of put them, like, I don't think a realistic outcome for Jacksonville this year involves a Lombardi trophy in the same way I think it can for Miami and the Jets. I think the best case scenario for them is that the last, you know, whatever it was, 8 games of Trevor Lawrence is the Trevor Lawrence we're getting from here on in. And we can now put Trevor Lawrence and Jacksonville in that group of quarterbacks with, you know, Mahomes, Josh Allen, Joe Burrow, blah, 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 Justin Herbert. If he takes that step, like, he puts himself in that category. And from that point on, the Jags will always be a serious contender, because simply that combination of elite quarterback plus, you know, half competent anything else means you're there, thereabouts. But I need to see more from the defense to be confident that they can sort of put the team around him that can really win a championship. So I think their best case scenario is the Lawrence just continues where he left off and the Jags are now serious from that point on. But I think it's still short of where those other teams are.
Yeah, I think that's all fair. I mean, I think, yeah, putting them a tick below some of the other teams, I wouldn't disagree with that. Worst case scenario is that Trevor Lawrence was just a really good run, and he's not going to take that next step. We also mentioned a lot that player progression is not just like Madden, right?
Right.
It's not this, you know, just, hey, it's going to get better. He's just going to keep getting better. Trevor Lawrence is now going to be in Patrick Mahomes territory. He might not be. He might just be a top 10 caliber quarterback, a top 12 caliber quarterback. And I don't expect that necessarily, but that's all in the range of possibilities as well. The defense doesn't play as well as they need to. And I don't think the Jags roster is great. I think it's pretty good. And all confidence is really propped up by where Trevor Lawrence lands in the spectrum of quarterbacks.
Yeah, Trevor Lawrence not picking up where he left off last season would be bad. And then the realistic worst case for them is probably they don't win the division. Like, this is heading into the season, this must be one of the most clear-cut divisions in the NFL in terms of, this is Jacksonville's to lose. If they lost, like, if somebody else, Indianapolis bounces back and puts things together and suddenly the Richardson thing works from day one and they win the division, or Houston somehow, CJ Stroud is amazing day one, blah, blah, blah. Tennessee bouncing back, like any of those situations happening, and Jacksonville finishes the season without being the division champion, I think is their worst case.
Yeah, I mean, let's talk about the rest of that division right now. Indianapolis Colts. So if the Jags don't win, Colts and Texans are up next in our reverse alphabetical order of the AFC. So what's the best case for the Colts? Anthony Richardson just looks like a star right away. That has to be it.
Yeah, this to me is one of the two teams actually are in this division are amongst the widest range of outcomes. I can definitely see a world where Richardson, they're able to create this offense, you know, with Shane Steichen and with the sort of the dry run of Jalen Hurts doing this, where they can put this thing together. And this is actually a much better team that people are giving them credit for. I can also see a world where it doesn't work at all. Like, it's barely functional and they just have to get through the season without winning hardly any games. And next year is the what they're actually shooting for. Now, it's important to realize that Justin Fields won himself the job last season with his performances, and yet the Bears got themselves the number one overall pick, given how successful that was on the field, right? And whilst we've been talking about the pathway that Jalen Hurts gives them, or gives the Eagles to, you know, to ascend, when his first year they won four games, right? So as much as there is a pathway to kind of prop things up and for this rushing style of quarterback to work and to be successful, if they're very, very bad as a passer right away, it's not going to win. Like, Richardson might give you cause for optimism and you might be excited about his future, but if he doesn't take a big step forward as a passer immediately, they will not win a lot of games. So I guess the realistic, most positive outlook is kind of like it was for Chicago last year. You come out of the season and you're really happy about where Richardson is going into year two, and you think you can be good next year.
Yeah, I agree with all that, man. That's what I think for the Colts and the Texans coming up, is just confidence in the future. I care less about, oh, it's 9 wins for the Colts, it's 10 wins, or they win the AFC. So I don't really care about this year. I mean, that's all nice and everything. If Richardson's that good, and the rest of the Colts, who probably should have been better last year on paper,
yeah,
if the rest of that just comes together and they win 9 or 10 games, that's fun as a Colts fan. But the most important thing is optimism for the future. The other thing I would say too is this like high upside draft that they've drafted, this draft class of Julius Brents and all these athletes, including Richardson. If they all show signs of life earlier, like a Tariq Woolen did, right? Instead of waiting till year two or three, this draft class comes together right now. I think that's all best case scenario for the Colts. Worst case is Anthony Richardson can't complete a pass. And yeah, even if, and may, and listen, here's the other part of his athleticism. He kind of got banged up a little bit. I talk a lot about injuries for quarterbacks being, they own that, right? It's not so much the style or your size. It's how you play the game. Richardson had those games where he'd get banged up and come out, much like a Fields, where you just miss some time. If that becomes a problem and he's just, his inaccuracy is just horrible for the offense. It's just impossible to move the ball. That's all in this worst case scenario. And the Colts look as incompetent as they did last year.
It's non-viability for Anthony Richardson is the worst case scenario. Like, it looks a lot like it did for Malik Willis last season, where you're saying, this can't work. Like, we cannot do this. Now, he's going to have more leeway than Malik Willis did last year. Like, even if that's the scenario, he gets put on the bench and they're still working long term to try and, you know, get him to that level. But that's the worst case, is that either he doesn't make it to week one because they're like, he's not good enough to play right now, or they put him out there week one, which is even worse, and he's not ready and can't complete a pass, and, you know, the passing game cannot function, and he doesn't look like Cam Newton, you know, in terms of athleticism and the ability to just like carry defensive ends 5 yards down the field, like all these kinds of things. And you look at him and you say, he can't be on the field right now. Like, we're going to need, I don't know how long it's going to take, but he cannot play at the moment. Like, that I think is the worst case scenario for them.
All right, Houston Texans, best case scenario for the Texans. CJ Stroud looks good right away too. Yeah.
Yeah. So I think they have a higher possible outcome than the team. So I was as down on CJ Stroud as pretty much anybody at draft time. But I think the things that he is good at, and the fact that he's paired with PFF Bobby, who's still dead to us, by the way, because he still hasn't replied to our text.
Group text, brutal.
It's obnoxious. But because he's paired with Bobby in that offense, you know, which specializes effectively at scheming number one reads open, I think there is a world where he's good immediately. Like, comes in, hits the ground running, looks like Mac Jones year one, and looks like Mac Jones year one in an offense that is better suited to making that guy look good. You know what I mean? So, like, grades at 80, like Mac Jones was, but the offense is more effective because it's the Shanahan tree offense. So actually we were even more impressed by what CJ Stroud looks like. And, you know, the sort of playmakers that they've added actually come together, and the Texans are quite good. Same thing with defense. Like, all those players that they just added, of because they added like 25 of them, inevitably seven of them you like, right? Well, that's most of a defense right there. If those guys actually put it together and start playing like we think they should in a D'Amico Ryan system, I actually think there's a world where the Texans are good, not just like surprise people, but like win the division.
Yeah, Jimmy Ward comes in, you know, D'Amico Ryan's guy, Will Anderson, everything that they traded for, if he's as advertised. CJ Stroud, again, I think accuracy is good. If you give him the open throws, he'll hit them. Like, all that stuff could happen here in year one. On the worst end, it's CJ Stroud is not what he looked like in the Georgia game. He doesn't handle pressure very well. The offensive line, which looks like it's promising but not there yet, ends up becoming really difficult to do anything with Houston. And all those what-ifs on defense go the other way, basically. And maybe even the Will Anderson concerns, where some people are like, hey, he's really good. I think he'll be really good, but he's not Von Miller, but he's not Khalil Mack, but he's not Myles Garrett. If he looks like that, then it's like, all right, we gave up three picks for this guy, for a guy who's good, but maybe not great.
Yeah, the worst case is that scoring below the 20th percentile in a cognition test as a quarterback is actually a really important data point, and CJ Stroud is simply not able to play quarterback at the NFL. Like, he ends up looking like Rex Grossman, right? Where if everything is fine, okay, Rex can sling it, right? But if the second you make him like, oh, uh-oh, things are breaking down, then all of a sudden he's just firing the ball into the face mask of a linebacker. Like, that's your worst case scenario.
You paint incredible pictures. Let's go to the Denver Broncos, where the over-under for Houston and Indianapolis, both 6.5. We go to the Broncos, where it's 8.5, and this is why this late June show is an interesting exercise, because if last year we were painting the worst-case scenario for the Broncos, it probably wouldn't even come close to the real scenario that happened last year. Russell Wilson looks like one of the worst quarterbacks in the NFL. The offense is atrocious. Nothing is good. And the Broncos end up picking in the, what did they pick, fourth or fifth? I mean, they didn't even have that pick. Picked fifth. Right. And so it's tough to – I'll get the worst-case scenario out of the way right now. Russ looks like he did last year, you know, despite having Sean Payton come in to save the day. So worst-case scenario is something that looks like last year. Best-case scenario, though, Russ and Sean Payton, all of a sudden things look different.
So how – okay, yeah, I agree with you. Worst case is Russ is done. It's the same thing. And now your only decision effectively is, do we take the medicine this offseason or next offseason?
When can we
cut? That's really what they're asking. Let me ask you, though, does their best possible scenario include a championship? Because remember, you rewind a year, right, to last year, the Russell Wilson thing, a lot of people were saying, but Denver's a Super Bowl contender now, right? Russell Wilson puts them in that category of, this was a championship roster in need of a championship caliber quarterback. Now, hindsight is making everybody go, ooh, you know, like that feels like a stretch. But is it? Like, if Peyton fixes Russell Wilson, are Denver back where we thought they would be, which is there?
No, I struggle with that one, because look, I know we talk a lot about the quarterback here. Aaron Rodgers is 2 years removed from playing basically at an elite level, right? Russell Wilson, even when he was playing at that elite level, it still felt like there was a little something missing. And he did win and almost won two titles when that defense was otherworldly and elite. I even if Russell Wilson gets back on track, I feel like he's so far down right now. Sean Payton drags him back up to, say, an 80 grade. I don't think we get elite Russell Wilson, and I just don't see it as championship caliber. So to me, the best case scenario for the Broncos is they're giving games to the Chiefs and the Chargers, and they're really competitive, and they're winning 9-11 games. But much like I feel like New England might struggle to get back to Super Bowl glory, I don't see Russell Wilson getting back to Super Bowl glory. So I would not say that the best case is a championship this year. But if you have Russell Wilson not looking older and slower, and he's running Sean Payton's offense, and then you get another year maybe of building that roster around him and you've got some confidence, I'd say that's the best case scenario. Is just, Russ is back on track. They win 9-11 games. They're competitive. And then maybe next year, he's not too old still, next year you're talking about the Broncos trying to compete with the Chiefs. That's what I think.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's fair. I think you probably have to assume that the true best case scenario for Russell Wilson is somehow they're able to shock him back to the player that he used to be, whatever that is. But like, whether it's, you know, he got complacent and now losing weight is the thing that's going to do it, whether it's Sean Payton managing what his exact game style is, but like rediscovering effectively the old Russell Wilson, I think should be in his realistic range of outcomes. Like, he's not old, right? What is he, like 33?
I think last year was his 33-year-old season, so 34.
Yeah, like, I mean, God, Tom Brady was playing at an elite level at 45. If, okay, Russell Wilson relies more on the athleticism. But, dude, Aaron Rodgers is, you know, able to keep on trucking at pushing 40. Like, Russ at 34 years old should not be toast, right?
Right.
For a guy that's supposedly been spending $1 million a year on, like, body recovery and longevity and stuff. Like, this guy should not be cooked at this point in his career. So I think a realistic best-case scenario has got to be he has a bounce back, whether that was, you know, whatever the reason for last year is, he looks more like the old player than the new one. And I think that does put them maybe in that, you know, maybe a tick below the best, like the best teams in the league, but like right up there.
Yeah, I think that's all fair. And then, you know, part of their worst case is their medium case is just, it's so tough in the AFC. You still just eight wins, medium case. For the Broncos. All that can happen. Like, Sean Payton did some good stuff and they win 8 or 9 games and it's like, eh, are they ever going to get over the hump? Cleveland Browns, over-under for them, 9.5. Again, I don't think these are official, but that's what the DraftKings game is playing here. Best case obviously involves something similar to what we just said about Russ. It's Deshaun Watson getting back on track.
Yeah. I mean, it is. It's it. The best case scenario is that you get that 90 grade Deshaun Watson season that we saw the last time he played a full year for Houston, right? And that does make Cleveland a genuine Super Bowl contender. So I think that is a fair, realistic best case for this team.
And much like we've said for other teams, what else comes together there? It's that defensive line that they overhauled, Za'Darius Smith and Dalvin Tomlinson coming in, adding support to Myles Garrett. It's the defense just having they were just really bad at times last year, just having Jim Schwartz come in addition to the talent, just a new-look defense that, you know, propels themselves into maybe a top-10 caliber unit, and then just the rest of the roster that they've built, which is just good. It's just a good, solid roster. It all depends on Watson, though, playing even 80-plus football, as we've talked about before. 80-plus PFF grade makes the Browns a very competitive team. 90-plus Watson puts them in the AFC Championship conversation, I think, from a best-case scenario. Worst case is also pretty clear. Watson, who looked nothing like he had previously, maybe it wasn't rust, and it's just, hey, he's just not as good. He can't handle the weather. He's not indoors anymore. All of the off-field wore on him. He doesn't – whatever. He's just not good anymore, and Browns fans are talking about 3 more years of guaranteed money that they've invested.
Yeah, that's worst case scenario. Is he looks the same as he did last year, and now you're in a horrible, horrible situation of being stuck with that contract with seemingly no end or no improvement in sight, and the whole thing. Like, either you need to figure out, I don't even know what they do at that point. Like, that would be a true nightmare scenario for any franchise.
Yeah, you bring in Sean Payton to try to fix him after that year, like the Broncos have done. Who do you pull out of retirement? Like, Mike Holmgren's going to come in. You pull somebody out of retirement to fix Deshaun Watson, I guess. Cincinnati Bengals, best case, Super Bowl, baby. They get over the hump here in Cincinnati.
Yeah, that's it. And it's not even a dramatically optimistic outlook. Like, that's what they should be looking for. Yeah. This is a... They're one of the elite teams in the league. They should be chasing that Super Bowl. They're good enough to make it happen. Realistic, positive outlook is it happens. They end up getting one of those games, you know, in the key moment and get over the hump.
Joseph Asai doesn't have a late hit on Patrick Mahomes, or Logan Wilson doesn't have a late holding call that's not really a hold in the Super Bowl. I mean, we're really talking a couple plays away here from Cincinnati being
right
in that mix. So those things go their way this year. That's best case. What's worst case, though, for the Bengals? Is it to me, it's not really like the Chiefs, where it's like, hey, if they lose in the divisional round, that's a disaster. But it's a wild card loss maybe for Cincinnati. It's their record's not as good just because they do have to play the Ravens, the Browns, the Steelers, and all these other AFC teams. It's just attrition, I think, for the Bengals, where they're still a really good team, but they only win 9 or 10 games and maybe lose early in the playoffs.
Yeah, so again, it's like with it being more about what the season says than the exact record, I think for Cincinnati, like a worst case scenario would be some kind of clear indication of a step backwards, you know? So everything has been building in the right direction for the Bengals since they got Joe Burrow. They've been taking steps forward or hitting the kind or reaching the kind of level that they need to be at and just needing, you know, a couple of plays to bounce their way for them to actually get the championship or get the payoff. But generally speaking, it's all been, you know, the correct trajectory in the graph. That being reversed in any way, shape, or form would be the worst case scenario, whatever that looks like, whether it's just the offense is not as good as the last couple of years, they regress somehow, Joe Burrow takes a step back, has a bad season, the replacements or the sort of the planned obsolescence on defense, the new players that have been that have to step in, Dax Hill, guys like that, don't play at the kind of level they need to, and all of a sudden the defense just takes a step backwards. Like, just some kind of clear, obvious regression coming out of this season.
Yeah, I think that's all fair as far as like the storyline and narrative stuff goes for the Bengals. That might be similar for the Buffalo Bills, who are up next. Let's talk worst case scenario for the Bills. Did their window close, right? I think that narrative is overrated. However, they did show signs, or they were supposed to be this elite team last year. They showed signs that were the Dolphins too competitive against them in the playoffs with Skylar Thompson? Were the losing to Zach Wilson's Jets along the way? Like, some of those things, those are warning signs maybe for the Bills. Josh Allen completely blowing a game against the Vikings, dropping the ball at the goal line. Like, those things, are those warning signs for the Bills or just little blips? So worst case scenario is that stuff projects itself into this year and the Bills just get lost in the mix in the deep AFC. I started with worst case.
Yeah, it's fine, you know. I think their worst case, so they're a little bit different from the Bengals, even though on the face of it, they're in kind of the same place, right? But it feels like the Bengals have already kind of, they're already on the door, you know, knocking away. They've been to a Super Bowl. They've been beating the Chiefs. Like, they're doing the things that you need to do to win championships. They just haven't quite gotten there yet. But it feels like Cincinnati is kind of right on that cusp and is in the place they need to be. Buffalo, it still feels like they keep coming up slightly short, you know, in a more disappointing way. And they're, I think, still looking for the little bits and pieces that are going to push them over the edge so that they can beat Kansas City, so they can beat Cincinnati, so that they can, you know, they still feel just themselves like they keep coming up slightly short and are trying to figure out why. I think their real worst case scenario is they end up there again in the offseason. Like, they look great. They roll through the regular season. They win the division. You know, maybe they beat somebody in the playoffs, and then they kind of unravel against, you know, Kansas City or Cincinnati. They get bounced in the divisional round again. They don't even make it to the championship game. And they then are in the offseason situation where it's like, I don't actually know what we do now. You know what I mean? Like, I'm not 100% certain. Like, where is the edge now? Because I think they're sort of at that point where they're slightly lost in terms of what is the thing that's going to put them over the top. I think Cincinnati knows, right? They've figured out where they need to be. I think Buffalo is a little bit like sort of feeling around trying to figure out what that missing piece of the puzzle is.
So the best case scenario for Buffalo, I think, so narrative wise, we talk winning a Super Bowl, of course, right? I think the thing to get there, though, is less reliance on Josh Allen. I think having where he's still elite, he's still great, but they have more games where just, hey, if they'll run the ball when needed. They're not relying on him on every third and short. Other receivers step up opposite Stephon Diggs. That was a big issue last year. Whether it's Dalton Kincaid as a first rounder, whether it's Gabriel Davis, whether it's Deontay Hardy, whether it's Khalil Shakir, those players step up in a way where it doesn't feel just like the Josh Allen show every single week, where he has those couple playoff games where he's out of his mind in 2021. But if he doesn't do that, they can still win games. And then health, right? Von Miller and, you know, staying the whole season, and Von Miller being that playoff closer, and, you know, sacking Patrick Mahomes or Joe Burrow or whoever he needs to sack on their way to a Super Bowl title. In addition to Sean McDermott taking over play calling and those little tweaks that they're making working, right? So that's and of course that all leading to a Super Bowl. So I think that's best case for the Bills, is a lot of the tweaks working and making sure that the supporting cast is showing up week after week for Josh Allen.
Yeah, and simply maintaining how they look, you know, at periods of the season, like the pass rush not running out of steam late in the year, or, you know, us not being concerned by how reliant the receiving core is on Stephon Diggs at one point. Like, just the maintenance of when they're really good during the course of the season and not sort of not reaching a point where they roll into the playoffs and you're kind of starting to get the feeling that maybe, you know, one of these other teams is going to do it instead of them.
All right, last team in the AFC, the Baltimore Ravens. Best case scenario, it's got to start with Lamar being healthy, and yeah, the Ravens making that playoff push to the Super Bowl. Is a championship in the cards potentially for the Ravens?
Yeah, they're another one of those teams, I think, who are good enough that their high end of outcome is championship. Real best case scenario, I think, for Baltimore is that whilst the Greg Roman system was really good for Lamar Jackson's development and the transition of him into the NFL, the actual best case scenario for Baltimore is that in the last couple of years, that's actually been holding Lamar back. Yeah. And he's talented enough as a passer that actually putting him in this Todd Monken system where you open it up more and ask him to pass more, he's actually going to tap in to like an extra percentage of Lamar Jackson that we didn't even know was there. And you're still going to have this, you know, the most devastating rushing threat in NFL history at the quarterback position. But now you've got it tied to a quarterback that's airing the ball out and carving people up in the passing game constantly. And all of a sudden this Baltimore offense becomes basically unstoppable because, like, we've never seen a player like that before.
And that coincides with the Ravens wide receiver group, which never looks like a strength, maybe potentially looking like a strength with OBJ and year three of Rashad Bateman and drafting Zay Flowers in the first round, maybe even tight end Isaiah Likely being that breakout player that we talked about last week to go with Mark Andrews. And all of a sudden you're like, man, look at Lamar. He's got all these playmakers to throw to, right, and he can run it, and the systems, you know, play into their strengths, good offensive line and all that stuff. So I do say all that stuff a lot. Did you notice that too? Somebody pointed that out to me. It's one of my things.
No.
So those are the good things for the Ravens. Defense, solid as usual, even with some turnover, and the Ravens make a run to the Super Bowl. Worst case, though, is Lamar gets hurt again, I assume. That's a big part of it.
Yeah. I mean,
but even if he's healthy, is it even just, like you mentioned earlier, is it not just the health thing, but they get into the playoffs and they lose early again? And you still have those questions. Can they even make the AFC championship?
Yeah, quarterback getting hurt is always the easy, you know, worst case scenario for anybody. And it's probably more fair to bring it up for Lamar because of the last couple of seasons. But if we sort of stick to the idea of it's probably unfair to say that because it's basically the worst case for any team, the true worst case is the exact opposite of what I talked about with the scheme, right? Where actually Greg Roman's offense was necessary to prop up Lamar Jackson, and he can't operate in a more conventionally, you know, wide open passing attack, and you really need to build this run heavy system. The whole thing is built off the backbone of what Lamar can do on the ground, and if that isn't, you know, a key component of this offense going forward, he just doesn't function as well as he can in the other system. And now you just got rid of the guy that built the other system. Like, that is the true, I think, worst case scenario for them.
Yeah, so that would be worse. That would be bad. What I described isn't worst-case scenario, but just what happens with every team that doesn't win it. You just sit there with question marks. Can Lamar get past the divisional round? Can you win with Lamar Jackson at quarterback? So if they just lose in the wild card or divisional round again, it's not worst-case, but it just gets to that whole, did you invest in the right guy? All that stuff comes up again.
But he's already kind of had that, right? Like, I think for those questions to really come back hard, it would be – Like he doesn't look good in this offense. Maybe it's just year one, but like that, I think would start to really bring those questions back. It's like, oh, maybe this guy just can't pass as a quarterback. And clearly that's ridiculous, right? But that I think is their true worst case scenario, is not that like the results don't quite go the way they want it to, because they internally are going to know. But like, if he really doesn't look good in this offense, that not only will that create a narrative that they don't want any part of, or that will just be a pain in the ass, but like that might actually realistically cause some internal questions about, wow, what can he actually do in this offense?
So there we go. It's the best and worst case scenarios for every AFC team. We worked in reverse alphabetical order. I believe it was correct. By the way, over under for the Ravens was 9.5. So check it out over at DraftKings.com. Those over unders. We'll take the NFC. We'll go team by team on Wednesday. But we appreciate everybody for tuning in here live on a Monday morning. And remember, let us know, what do you want us to do as far as a historic draft? Which one? Well, I'll put a poll out there. I'll take a couple of the big ones. Historic draft that you would want us to relive and just kind of just have some fun with. We're not redrafting, just going back and reliving some draft from history on one of our future shows. Sound good, man?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
All right. Thanks to everybody for tuning in. We'll see you again on Wednesday.